about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim of the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Universal Hive Mind. Today is July 1st, 2025. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 76th Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for this show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, X, Minds, BitChute, and much more. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome to the Cubbyhole. And as I will continue to let all first-timers know, I definitely recommend starting at podcast number one when you're ready and moving forward in chronological order, so that way you'll have a bigger understanding of the information that is preserved in this whole Cubbyhole podcast, and you'll really start to see just how important it is. Also, welcome back all the studiers, all the listeners of the show. I really appreciate all your efforts, all your time and attention, and hopefully this information has been inspiring so far. And also, I really hope that it has compelled you to go further into your work, your own work. And even more than that, I really hope that it has inspired you to go even further than what you're hearing here in this podcast. And, you know, really, that's one of the reasons that I do what I do, is that I hope that this information that you're listening to, that you're studying, is inspiring you to go much further, to really connect everything, to see how much more there really is to the self and to the world that we're living in. And I have been very inspired by other great workers and creation and, you know, many other people. I've been very inspired. The spire that others have built has been passed on to me. I have been open to receive the spire of inspiration that they have passed on. And now I am building upon that spire. I am building upon the spire of that inspiration. And that's what the Cubbyhole is. That's what outcasting is. That's what all my presentations are. I'm building upon the spire that has been passed on to me. And that is a spire that I allowed into myself by taking lots of notes, by listening with my heart, by giving my time and attention. And so now, through these podcasts and through the presentations and through my art, I am building upon the spire that was passed on to me. And now I am passing it on to you, on to the student, in hopes that you will build upon this spire of inspiration. And that is really what this is about, because as we take in this information, it is not for only the individual. It is for all. So that is why I put this information out publicly, because I understand that that spire is not just for me, it is for all. And that being said, I'm going to get further into this inspiration as we go through the rest of the show, because it all has to do with the concept of the sacred trace, which is what this whole show is really all about. And I talked about the profane trace in the last episode, number 75. And this is a very important prerequisite to the sacred trace, because you have to understand the sacred and the profane in tandem. You have to understand them together. And the way that you understand them together is through the trace. At least that's how I understand it. And I recognize how important the trace is between the two. And they have to be explained together. So that's why I started with the profane, to help people understand what that really represents, because it's about starting in the darkness, you know, starting this journey truly in the darkness, and then working your way out of the darkness by discovering the sacred. Because we live in a world of darkness. We live in a profane world for the most part. So the sacred is being used in a profane way. And so I'm going to get further into this. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I'm also going to mention creation with the sacred trace, and also inspiration, and hopefully we'll get into some other deeper topics dealing with religion and the retrace, and also the occult, the logos, and Thoth. And those will definitely, if I don't really talk about those too much in this show, I definitely will be getting into those topics as we move forward. So I'm going to take my time with this sacred trace, because it is a very big deal. It is something so powerful. It is an umbrella term, and there is a lot to it. So I'm going to just, you know, go through the information as thorough as possible. And obviously there's a lot that I'm not going to talk about, because it would just take too long, but I'm really just going to try to get to the heart of it and, you know, give some examples, give some, and go over some techniques eventually. And there's a lot to this sacred trace. So there will be slides for today's show. So definitely make sure to go to cubbyhole.com and go to the top where it says episodes 51 to 100. And when you click on that, go all the way down to show number 76, and there you will find all the slides for today's show. And it's really important to follow along with those slides just so you see the side-by-side, because I also put the profane trace slides from the last episode. So that way you can have a side-by-side, because I think it's really important to see them together, so that way you really see the contrast between the two. But I'm going to go over the aspects of what I talked about on the profane trace, dealing with emulation, synchronization, ritual, and mimicking. And I'm going to go over those same aspects with the sacred trace in this show. So I'm going to, you know, briefly talk about the profane trace and then talk about the sacred trace aspects. So I'm going to do a quick recap of show number 75, and then we will get into the ritual that I've been doing regarding the explanation of the sacred bridge and the garden. So I'm going to go ahead and just quickly go through this recap, so we can just, you know, get right into the topic. So the topics for show number 75, I talked about the profane trace. And again, this is dealing with using words, using objects, using anything sacred in a way that is disconnected from the sacred, or disrespecting the sacred. And that could mean consciously using the sacred in this way, but most of the time it's because people are unconscious in the way that they're using the sacred. So the profane trace is a very big deal, and I'm going to further explain it as I go through this. And then I got into the Aten, which is the way of the 10 being preserved and passed on through the stellar, the lunar, and the solar. And this is a very big deal. This is something that I talked about with the, I explained where I had people draw the square to find the center through the X, and then the circle is concealed within the square. To have the four corners that are outside of the square, but the way that those four corners come together is through the X, which finds the center point. That is the fifth point. So it's a very big deal to understand the Aten. And thankfully for Doug bringing that to the table and really expressing just how important that aspect is to this whole unraveling of the mythos. And also we got into fetishism, which is about using the sacred through proxy worship. So that means putting some kind of object in place of the spirit, let's say, and then over time, that connection, that understanding gets lost. And then the thing that is the object that is in place of the spirit ends up being venerated, and then the spirit gets lost, or the connection or the understanding of the spirit gets lost. And then this is also what causes materialism. But you know, that's something that I have explained, and I'm going to continue to explain as we go through this information, because it is a very big deal. It is one of the reasons why we have lost our way with spirit in this world. It's because we, as a species, have had this fetishism for a very long time with the proxy rather than the thing that the proxy is in place for. So then we got into emulation. We got into synchronization, ritual, mimicking. These are the ways that we're going to understand the sacred trace and also the profane trace a lot further. Okay, it's not limited. The profane trace and the sacred trace are not limited to the emulation, synchronization, ritual, and mimicking. Okay, I just want to make that very clear. But these are very important parts. These are very important aspects or modalities to the sacred trace, especially. And also, we got into the crescent arch. This is a very important part of this whole mystery, because it's dealing with the lunar mythos. And I'm going to continue to explain what I mean by this, especially through the ritual that I do. And hopefully it really resonates with you as I continue to explain it and extrapolate on it. We got into Thoth, which is also, this is part of understanding this crescent arch back into antiquity, back to the stellar. We got into sign language, pure forms, mythology, eschatology, hero cults, cosmic parents, which go together. The hero cults and the cosmic parents really go together. So I just really hope people are making that connection, because it is a very big deal, and I don't hear anybody else talking about this, and I'm going to continue to explain what I mean by this as we go through these shows. Also, we got into totemic sociology and totemism, animism, rejuvenation, mental material death, spiritual rebirth, spirit, square, X, zodiac, the inner journey of the soul, darkness, soil, underworld, Amenta, the Duat, the tomb, the womb, death, metamorphosis, natural law, religion, mystery traditions, mystery schools, the little bear, the great year cycle, stellar mythos, lunar mythos, solar mythos, Osiris, Horus, esoteric Freemasonry, anthropomorphism, preserving, and Aphanism. So, and there's so much more that was part of that show and all the other shows leading up to that show. But these are the aspects that I really, or the concepts that I really want people to focus on probably the most. And so that's just very important to just always do those recaps to get everybody up to speed with what the prior show was and now what we're getting into, what we're building from. So let's go ahead and go to the very first slide for this show, which is the zodiac. And this is to look at and observe while I go through this ritual. And it's very important to follow along with this while I go through this information and look at this zodiac in this orientation so you can really see where we're at and where we're going. Because we have to understand that the whole underworld is the lower half of the zodiac, and Amenta is starting in Libra. So going from Virgo into Libra is the starting point of Amenta. Okay, going down in the west. So over to the right, Virgo to Libra is in the west, where the sun, the soul, is going down into the west. Okay, so we are currently still drawing out or tracing from the chest of the third degree tracing board of ancient modern esoteric Freemasonry, which is analogous to the bottom half of this zodiac. And really the whole zodiac, when you really understand it, but it's specifically the bottom half, okay? So we are in the process of remembering these pure forms and reuniting with the spirit of true care in order to rebuild, in order to polish and strengthen the modern pillar of today, which is part of this huge sacred bridge that is barely connected to this ancient sacred pillar of the past. It's missing the lunar crescent arch. It's not really missing it. It's there. It's just we have to remember this, just like Osiris has to be remembered in the lunar. We have to remember the crescent, the lunar crescent arch, back to this sacred pillar of the stellar. And then in today's world, the modern pillar is the solar. So this is the third degree. We're in the third degree. And so what we're trying to do is remember through the eschatology the lunar arch that takes us back to the stellar. Because it is my understanding that there is only one way to get back to the Pa, is through the Ma. The Ma is the sacred feminine, the care, the crescent, the arch back to this sacred stellar pillar. And really the whole lunar crescent is sacred as well. It's all sacred. All of it is. But we have to remember that in the solar cult, in the solar pillar of today, we have lost our way because we have literalized the lunar light as solar light. So if there's one thing that I really hope people remember so much, is that the lunar light is both literal light and spiritual light, or you could say animistic light, because it's about understanding that that light is stellar. It's not just literal sunlight, it's stellar light. And also remember, the sun is a star. But it's the sun. It's the sun of the stars, you could say. It's the sun of the Pa. It's the sun of the cosmic father, which is the stars. And in particular, the little bear stars. Because, and you know, again, don't take it so literal. Take it as an allegory, what I'm saying. You know, think about these things animistically. Think about these things symbolically, but understand that we live in a world, in the modern world, we live in a very literalized light form. So that means that we take everything so literal, most people do, even people who claim to be spiritual, who are actually religious, they take everything very literal. They don't understand why, and they don't even understand that they are. But the point is that, you know, we can learn why we are. We can become conscious of this if we reorient ourselves. And I'm going to get very deeply into this as we go through this information. But the point is about understanding this lunar crescent that goes back to the stellar. Okay, this is the picture that I'm painting based on understanding the pillars, based on understanding the solar pillar, the lunar pillar, and then the stellar pillar, which is the seven, which is the great I, the one great spirit symbolically in the little bear, the seven stars that never set. That's why it's associated with the eye of providence. So if we can figure this out, we can really have a deeper connection, a more pure connection, because we are living in a fragmented solar world of literalism and materialism and socialism. But if we reconnect through this lunar arch back to the stellar and really strengthen this, we can have a world of freedom from socialism, from man's law, because people will start to take themselves way more serious and actually have respect. We've lost so much respect because we are such a literal species now. But we don't have to be. Each one of you does not have to be this way. You have a choice. We each have a choice. But we can't depend on everyone else to do our work for us. Therefore, it is an individual effort first, which ends up becoming a collective effort. It can't be collective to the individual. It has to be individual to the collective. But we're living in a world where it's collective to the individual, which doesn't work. Doesn't work that way. So we have to understand it's both. We have to start at the individual level, and then it will naturally become a cooperation. And that doesn't mean everything is going to be kumbaya. It just means that we will learn how to overcome the ego that wants to dominate each other and learn how to cooperate like the bees of a hive, hinting why I say the universal hive mind. So for this reason, because we don't know this information, because we have lost our understanding of this lunar crescent arch back to the stellar, the dark ruling class that I called the cycle paths, which is, you know, some wordplay or green language for psychopaths, they thrive on the severed ties of the masses with their ancient ancestors and their cosmic parents, aka the lunar and the stellar. They thrive on the fact that there's no connection any longer collectively. And so they usurp their power from the ignorance and negligence of this dilemma that we're all in. They are taking all the power of people not knowing this information, because people think that the light of the moon is the light only of the sun. And of course, there's so much more to what I'm saying, but the point is, that is really the crux of the problem right there. And I'm telling you that with 100% understanding of why that is. They know that we are ignorant of the stellar light. They know this. That's why they keep us in a west to east or east to west prospect in our mind. They keep us disoriented. But really, it's not that they keep us disoriented. It's that people, most people, are okay with being ignorant on how the world works. They're okay with being disoriented. They don't even care about what orientation really means and how important it is. So this means that people have lost their way. They have lost the knowledge. They have neglected the knowledge. And most importantly, they have ignored the knowledge of the ancient Egyptian mythos over time. And because it's been lost and forgotten, people have just given up. And then, therefore, because people who are in positions of power, who are the psychopaths, the psychopaths of the world, who just want to, that's the other thing we have to remember is that the people who run this world, who know how everything operates and who are usurping their power through the ignorance of the people, because they've lost their way, their connection to these cosmic parents, they are in place as mommy and daddy, the state and the government. They are in place. They are there, I would say, for the reason that it's very possible that these people don't really know the truth, but they see an opportunity to live above everyone else because maybe they themselves have been cut off from their cosmic or from our cosmic parents as well. And I would say that's more than likely, because if they were truly connected to their cosmic parents, being lunar and stellar, I don't think that they would be acting the way that they are. But I would say that one of the biggest things that we have to understand is that these people who are at the top, these rulers, these psychopaths, these elitists, these dark occultists, these sorcerers, they don't have to know that connection. They don't have to know that knowledge of lunar and stellar. They only have to make sure you and the rest of the people of this world don't know that information. So that way they can continue to usurp the power from ignorance, their power from ignorance. So that is a very important part that we really have to pay attention to, because it's everything to understanding that we're not getting out of this condition of slavery until we reunite with the stellar through the lunar, or reunite with Pa through Ma. And that means raising from the child of the solar back to a parental unified parent, which is lunar and stellar together, which I associate that with the whole neocortex being illuminated. And so we just have to understand that we have to overcome neglect, we have to overcome apathy and laziness and cowardice and ignorance, because these are the behaviors that have completely obliterated, almost completely obliterated, this connecting archway back to this ancient sacred stellar pillar. And what this Cubbyhole podcast is really all about is restoring this lunar care, this lunar sacred arch, this whole archway back to its correct functional form. Because it's about understanding that the better and sturdier this connection is to the source, the more clarity and understanding of our true sovereignty, which will in turn help us get out of the condition of ignorance and darkness and ultimately slavery. And we're doing this as a correspondence. That's what these traditions, these mystery traditions, are all about, to help us strengthen our mind with correspondence, to help us strengthen our hearts in correspondence, and then will this information into manifestation, to will the spire outwardly in hopes that others receive that spire of inspiration. So this is a very high level of responsibility. It is parental responsibility, because that's really the only responsibility there is, to be stewards of this world, to not be slaves to anyone else or to your own devices. So we have to cultivate care, because we are programmed, we are conditioned, mostly, most people are conditioned in the state of apathy, to not care. So we have to cultivate care, because we live in a world of cultivating apathy. So we have to remember care and cultivate care back to freedom, back to connection. So in order to do this, we have to sacrifice. We have to sacrifice the things that we're so bound to in our everyday life. So this means, instead of watching TV, endless TV shows and news and movies, we have to make time to take notes and research and come to understanding the information, and then organize the information, and then share the information, express the information, so others have a chance to be inspired, because it's a refinement process towards evolution, towards freedom, freedom from man's law, freedom from socialism. That's what it's about. So it's our divine conscious connection with nature and our sovereignty. It's all about our direct lineage back to the ancient adepts of the past, who were the raised elders, the learned men, the learned women, who made extreme sacrifices to preserve this beautiful light in stone, or in the mythos, or in other sacred traditions. So, in order to discover these preserved sciences, we are symbolically journeying through the soul receiver of Amenta, where the sun, the soul, is received in the west, in Libra. Okay, because we're dealing with Amenta in the solar. When I'm going through this ritual, I'm really trying to help people understand the solar, the lunar, and the stellar. But we have to understand Amenta in the solar first. That's really what is going to help us orient ourselves and have a better stepwise chronological progression, okay? I think it's really important that we understand Amenta in the West first. So in the solar mythos, this is the soul receiver in the West. But this is internal. You have to look at the west where the sun goes down in the darkness below the horizon. You have to look at that as the sun going down from the material into the spirit realm through the trials of the Duat, through the underworld. And we're doing this as a means of bridging the gap of the sacred bridge, which is dealing with the lunar, because we're going into the night sky. We're going into darkness. And then we have to understand that this is about going through the hidden realm, because you can't see the sun when it goes below the horizon. So this is about the soul going down into the hidden realm or the occult, to learn the occult, to experience the understanding of the occult. And so this is where we derive the esoteric systems, the mystery traditions, because we derive the esoteric systems from the mist. So we're passing through the Duat, and this is where our behavior is measured, and what we know is measured. So this is the principle of Thoth, or the more ancient Tot, because Thoth is the measurer. So we have to understand how Thoth is the principle at this point. So we are symbolically sowing knowledge in the black soil of Chem, or the southern half of Earth. We have to understand that the southern half of Earth is the sacred womb. It's symbolically the sacred womb, or the sacred soil. It's the sacred feminine. So this whole image, the zodiac, and northern earth and southern earth, the hemispheres, this is the sacred garden. Earth itself is the sacred garden, but really the whole cosmos and earth is the sacred garden. And hopefully when we are going down into this soil and bringing knowledge to the soil, to the information, hopefully we will reap more truth and more wisdom. It's never guaranteed. That's why we hope for it. So we are filling the grail by demystifying the occult. So I really hope that this little ritual helps people understand. And I do add to it, and I also take away to this, you know, ritual. Because I'm really just trying to guide people through this information as accurate as possible, to help people understand that there's so much more here than just, you know, it's not just astronomy, it's not just astrology, it's astrotheology. It is a way for us to reunite with something so much bigger than us. And you can call that the spirit. You can call that God. You can call that the intelligence of the universe, whatever you want to call it. You can call it the higher power and or source. I think a lot of people agree that source is probably one of the best terms to use, because yes, that's what it is. We're trying to reunite with Source to help us become conscious of what it is that we're here to do, why we're here. So that being said, we're going to get right into the material regarding the sacred trace. And just remember that, you know, it's important to understand the profane trace in accordance or in opposition or with the sacred trace. So the profane trace is about something that imitates the sacred or imitates the pure forms, but it's disconnected, it's distorted of the original meaning, the pure original meaning. So we have to understand that in today's world, we're using, most people are using the sacred in a profane way. And I explained what I meant by that. So we're going to get into the opposite of that in this show. But this profane trace is all about being disoriented outside of the temple, being lost and confused, not knowing the difference between light and dark, or between right and wrong. And so the sacred trace would be the opposite of that. It's about tracing out the internal temple, but also it's about tracing out the external temple consciously. Okay, so we have to also understand that too. So we're going to go to the very first slide, which is the sacred trace. Now, again, I did quickly cover this in the last episode, but I'm going to go a lot further into explaining this concept so we can really see the true symbolic power of this trace, of this sacred trace, because it has everything to do with the Netcher Thoth. And I just want people to keep that in mind as we move towards the Thoth unfoldment. And also keep in mind how Thoth is related in this part of the zodiac, because it's about understanding that Thoth has everything to do with the moon. And he also has everything to do with helping put Osiris back together and also fashioning a phallus in place where there isn't one. So he is the measurer of cycles, which means he traces out movements. He traces out the shapes. He traces out light. He measures light. He measures time. So he traces out essentially the soul and the spirit. That's what he is for. So he's very important to the eschatology. He's very important to the rememberment. So the word sacred has a few really important meanings that we need to address. And it's really important that we get very eclectic in the definitions that we discover of these words, so that way we can have a bigger picture understanding of the definition, right? So the first meaning of this word sacred states regarding with respect, which means something that deserves close attention and very deep observation, something that shouldn't be ignored. Okay? So it also means holy. And this is about something being pure or whole, something that hasn't been broken, something that can't truly be corrupted. Even though it can be corrupted in the mind, it can't truly be corrupted like truth. Because no matter how much you corrupt it in your mind, you will always be able to find it because it's pure. But it might take a lot of time and tenacity and care to find that which is holy. Because we live in a world where people have no idea what holy means, most people. And it's because they are so fragmented in darkness and ignorance that they have not taken the time that is required to refold themselves, or even unfold the mystery, but then refold the fragmented forms back to a pure form, which is holy. So this is something grand. It's something bigger than us. It's a higher power than us. Sacred also means connected with or to the Creator, or connection with the intelligence of the universe. It's about something being connected to all that is. And sacred can mean worthy of veneration, which is really all about having the highest form of respect or reverence for something that is pure and powerful and grand, especially something natural in nature, like the force of a wave, or lunar magnetism, or thunder and lightning, or sunlight, or the starry night. So again, it's something bigger than us, something grand, something powerful, because it's about understanding elemental powers. So this is about having appreciation through experience and hard work to learn and understand creation and spiritual laws. And that being said, so the word trace means to follow in the sense of a course. So to follow or pursue something through a process or a sequence. So it's about following the signs or the evidence or the traces of something in order to get closer to the cause. What is the cause? What is the origins? You know, what is the truth? So it also means to track or search, which means to observe or investigate or trace the footsteps of something, like a breadcrumb trail. And what's needed for this is a trace amount of evidence or a critical piece of information to begin the investigation. And we have to remember that we are all inherently investigators. We're all detectives. We all have the right to investigate. We all have the right to be detectives of our own journey or of the truth. All of us. But we have to care enough. And we also need a trace amount of evidence to start this journey. Or we need a trace amount of inspiration. I'm going to get into that as I go through these slides. But the trace also means to draw or make an outline of something, indicating that something can be discovered through enough evidence or eclectic gathering of information. So it's about copying something, to copy or render form by following its lines, like geometry or symbolism. So this is what I talked about in the last episode, which is if you have a tracing paper, which is typically foggy looking, or it's transparent, but it's not completely transparent. It's like a white piece of paper, but you can barely see through it, but you can see through it enough to where you can start to trace an image out. And when you're tracing an image out, you are automatically drawing an image. And when you're drawing an image, you are drawing out clarity. Because the image on the other side of the paper or underneath the paper is not clear. But the moment that you take the pen or pencil or whatever you're using to trace the image out, now you're gaining clarity by the act of tracing. Now you are drawing out information. You're drawing out clarity. Doesn't mean it's going to be the clearest, but the point is the more that you draw it out, the more you start to understand what it is that you're tracing. You start to learn that image. It starts to burn into your mind because now you have muscle memory, even. You know, one of the things that I used to do when I was a kid was I would trace out cartoon characters like this. And once I traced the cartoon character, then I had muscle memory where I could redraw that same cartoon character without looking at anything or without looking at, you know, the actual drawing of the cartoon character. And this taught me that I could trace anything or look at anything and draw it, and therefore I would remember it, and I could draw it out anywhere that I go. And this is the whole point of, I'm going to talk about this again when I talk about the tracing boards, but it's the same principle. You're tracing something out in order to gain memory and clarity. So it's a very, very important part of this whole mystery of learning the technique. I mean, obviously there's many, many techniques, but the act of tracing is so broad and it's so sacred, because when you draw a cartoon character, that's something made up by another person. But to trace something very sacred in nature, like a tree, or if you could capture a wave or capture an animal, if you draw an animal, or to draw anything in nature, what you're doing is you're starting to learn the form. You're memorizing the form. Now, if you apply that to the spiritual realm and go a lot further, now you're starting to really develop, especially when you get into geometry and when you trace forms, geometric forms, now you're really starting to gain clarity into what those forms mean symbolically, internally. Especially if you draw a circle, you know, start with a point in the center and draw a circle, or draw a triangle, draw just a straight line, draw a square or a pentagram or pentagon, you know, any of these forms, you start to understand how to draw them or what they look like. So that way you can remember internally what it's really meant for. Because it's not, we don't just have squares just to have squares. We don't have circles just to have circles when we discover these forms. They're there to teach us something about ourselves. And that is why they're so important. And that's why they're elemental. They're sacred. And trace also means figuratively to ponder or investigate. So in other words, this means to contemplate or think about what has been researched or what has been collected. It means to trace to and fro, you know, through the spire ritual, because it's the point or the mark or the bullseye that a good investigator aims for, right? So what are you aiming for as an investigator? Are you aiming for the truth? Are you aiming for a goal? Are you aiming for the light? Are you aiming for clarity? Because they all mean the same thing, but it's this spiral unfolding journey from the unknown to the understanding. It's about understanding that we start with a trace amount of information, and then we continue to trace out more information to be more eclectic, which then in turn gets us closer to light, which also raises the spire upward. So the sacred trace means the mindful pursuit of perceiving, investigating, and outlining the presence or pattern of the holy within reality, symbol, or self. And to outline something is the art and action of tracing. It's the mimicry of tracing, which draws out the clarity. It means to search and observe and follow back to pure forms or divine forms or sacred forms. So it's about distilling information into a big, clear picture of connection and understanding. It's about getting back to pure forms, which helps us arrive closer to source. Something bigger than us, away from dogma, away from fragmentation. So now we're going to get into inspiration. So the sacred trace truly begins with inspiration. And that being said, we need a trace of evidence to get started into our investigation. We need a trace of evidence to inspire a reason to go further into learning. That's all about the trace, which is the spire that I keep talking about. So the inspire at eye on, being conscious of the spire, which means having the eye on and then passing that light, that illumination of the oculus, of the knowledge onto others. So the spire is found inwardly, and then it's expressed outwardly in a way that transfers to others like an antenna. It's continuous. So it's about the cause that has inspired all life. And so humans have the ability to receive and become conscious of this spire. So once you get the spire of inspiration, you have the ability, you have the choice to pass on the spire or the spiral cone, if you will. You're truly conspiring. It's a tracing mechanism. That's what this is all about. So as it reads in this slide, the sacred trace begins with inspiration, which is a stirring or a spiraling from beyond the self that breathes life into the unfolding understanding. So that could come from others or it could come from creation itself. It is the invisible spark that animates the inner journey, and then awakening it through a subtle calling or inner activation. So the spark is the trace which is needed in order to begin the activation, okay? And this is why it's so important to become inspiring to others, because as you receive the spire of inspiration, it becomes a moral obligation to inspire others with that same information. That's really what the great work is all about. It's what gives someone more of a reason to further unfold their journey. Because as you receive the inspiration from others and you build upon that, now you're giving others a reason, if the information is solid, if the information is on point, if it's on center, if it is giving someone something central to look at, where they can observe from all angles and see that center point of illumination, That is what gives people inspire at ION, inspiration to build upon that, because it's about working on solid foundations. It's about working with truth. It's about something that is robust. It's about something that is at the center of all that is. So to be inspired is to trace an idea or form, not to replicate it, but to build upon it, where something beyond the self stirs the mind, the heart, or spirit into motion. This often leads to insight. It leads to creativity or action that feels both meaningful and transcendent. Inspiration raises the inner spire, the point toward a clear apex, a concentrated idea that becomes clear and goal-like, drawing the mind toward one's highest value, because it's all about the joy of gaining more truth and understanding, which is growth. That's true growth. Growth towards the higher self. It's about spiraling up, unfolding up, and central into equilibrium. It's the up of waking. You know, to wake up is to rise to aspire or aspire. Because to aspire to do something is to reach for something high, to reach for a dream, to reach for a goal, to reach for something that has a high value or the highest value. So that would be like, I don't know, freedom. To reach for freedom. It doesn't mean you're ever going to get to freedom. It doesn't mean you're ever going to get to the goal, or it doesn't mean you're ever going to get to the central light or to the ultimate truth. It just means that you're going towards the highest thing. You're aspiring to it. So the inspire is like the tip top of a spiral cone. It is a continuously returning inward facing point. It is a kind of eternal conical bullseye. It is the target. It is the end point. It is the ever beckoning aim, something that's just out of reach, yet continually pulling or drawing you toward it. It's like magnetism. It is a goal not fixed in space, but alive in spirit, because it's at the center of all that is. It's central, but it's also up, in the sense that you have to be up to go on your spiraling journey to discover the centrally defined point. And we have to remember that energy flows where attention goes. So your energy will flow to the goal, to the light, to the truth, if your attention is on it. If your attention is gravitated towards it, if that is what you desire, if that is what you truly want, or even better, if you know that it's just the right thing to do. So as I trace, and as I express what I've traced regarding the trace, then the spire of inspiration gets passed on to those who are ready to breathe in inwardly the same breath or the same vein or the same spirit, however you want to word that. But to do this, to truly conspire in truth, towards truth, because it's about breathing together in the same spirit. That's what conspire means. together in the same breath. And I just want to make it clear that this has nothing to do with having no uniqueness. It's not a collectivist idea, okay? It just means being principled in truth, breathing the sacred together. Because as you are principled in truth, you will eventually get to the same place. That's what it's about. It doesn't mean that your journey is going to be like anybody else's. Everybody's journey is different. Everybody's life is unique. But mentally, not everybody is connected to truth. They have collectivist ideas that were planted there by others, by sorcerers, who keep them in lockstep and get people, they influence people to create the world that they want, that they see fit. And the green language is really important here too, with the word conspire, because it means cone spire. So the cone spire is the symbol that we see on the right. This symbol preserves the unified breath of life. So if there was one symbol that could represent the unified breath of life, this would be it. It preserves the transformative spiritual path to truth, or a goal, or the connection with the Creator. That's what it's about. It is the cone, it's even the cone seal, the concealment of the sacred Holy Trinity, because this is a seal, and it is the seal that we have together. This is the breath that we have together, that we share together, the one cone spire, or the one breath of life. So, when it comes to the sacred Holy Trinity, we have to understand that the Holy Trinity is something that is so much more ancient than what most people think. The original Holy Trinity was Sut, Horus, and Shu. That was the original Trinity, and it's really important to understand that in the stellar mythos. But I think it's also important to understand the Holy Trinity of the whole mythos, which is the stellar, the lunar, and the solar. Like I said, it's the Father, the Mother, and the Child. And it's so important to see it this way, because this cone spire really conceals the whole mythos. Again, the stellar, you could say the stellar at the point on the top, the circle or oval, however you want to look at that, at the bottom, being the sacred mother, and then the point at the center would be the divine child or the divine potential. So it conceals the most high, it conceals the most low or the most deep, and it conceals all potential in between. It also conceals the triune brain. It conceals the trivium process. It is the triune God in order to understand God, period. So the reason for this triune God, I just want to explain this, is that it's a triune God as in God the Father, God the Mother, and God the Child, because this is what helps us understand God as in God the one God. So to understand the three in order to better understand the one. Just like you can't understand the one without the two, well, you really can't understand the one or the two without the three. So it symbolically is God the Father as, you know, the highest point, the lightest, the somethingness, the gift giver. And then as the light goes down from the point of the Most High down to the bottom, the deepest, this is God the Mother, which is the darkest. It's the deepest, the furthest, the nothingness. This is the womb gift receiver. This is the processor of the gift. And the point at the center is the seed of potentiality. It is the divine child that basically awaits its birth and its rebirth and rise to the Father through the Mother. So the gift itself is life. It is experience. But the waking process allows for conscious rising to the point of life. That's what this symbol represents. It's about discovering the point of life. From the circle to the point, from nothingness to somethingness. But I think it's really important to understand it's about going from somethingness to nothingness as a form of recognizing the great mirror or correspondence, or you can look at it as the creator trying to see itself, trying to become conscious of itself. And therefore, it's about understanding that somethingness needed nothingness in order to see the somethingness. But again, you also have to understand that somethingness also comes from nothingness. But that's important to understand it as the seed of potentiality. So it is triune. And this is very, very powerful. It's very beautiful because it's something you can see in your own family. Something that is so sacred physically. And I said this in my EarthBrain 3 presentation, and I think it's so powerful to understand because if you look at yourself as coming from the union of your mother and your father as triune, as a familial triune bond, regardless of what your relationship is with them, there will always be a sacred bond between you, your mother, and your father in physical form, because your father is the gift giver, and your mother is the gift receiver and processor of that gift. And then once the gift is formed and comes out, once the gift is unified and comes out, that is your life. The gift is your life. Your experience is the gift. So if you relate that to the spiritual realm, it all starts to click. It all starts to make so much more sense of the power of this Holy Trinity. Because it's not just in the spiritual realm, it's in the physical, because it's about understanding that both are happening at the same time, in the same place. They're not separate from each other. It's just they have to be understood separately in order to understand them together as one. So it's very, very powerful. And, you know, this is why the word conspiracy is so demonized, because it is conspire. The word conspiracy is conspiracy. And so people who are demonized, who are conspiracy theorists, who are, you know, a lot of them are critical thinkers, a lot of them are not, but conspiracy theorists recognize that something is off. They recognize that something is really wrong in this world. And therefore, when this word is, see, because we have to remember that this word was obfuscated by the CIA during the JFK assassination, but I would argue that it happened before that too. But the point is that using that word to dismiss someone who is bringing knowledge to the table that goes against the majority's belief system, this is a way to dismiss people with a negative energy. And putting negative energy into the word conspiracy means putting negative energy into the breath of togetherness. And so this word being obfuscated and used with a very negative connotation, and all the psyops that are connected to it, has really destroyed the pureness of what the word really conceals, which is this cone spire. So every time you are using this term to dismiss someone, call them a conspiracy kook or conspiracy theorist, or, you know, just writing off anything as a conspiracy theory, just using this term loosely and ignorantly, this means that people do not understand being together in the same breath for the purpose of truth discovery, which is the cone spire. So using this word all the time in the way that we're using it, in its obfuscated manner, is very, very abusive to this cone spire. But we're going to learn this word. We have to relearn this word. We have to understand the obfuscation around it. We have to understand how it's being used improperly. And we have to understand how it's put us in this really negative loop that keeps us in a very fragmented form away from what truly matters, which is our spiritual journey to find the point, to find the purpose, to find the light, to find our connection to the Most High. So you're not wanted to know that power of the cone spire by the way that this term is being used, because they don't want you to be inspired by this type of information. They want everyone to be cowards of conspiracies, which means they really want you to be cowards of the cone spire. They want you to be cowards of your own internal spiritual journey. Because if you start to wake up to what that really means, then you're not going to be easy to control. This symbol holds the breath of life. That's what it represents. And then you have the word, you know, then there's the green language of the word cone, which means to see with one. Well, what is the one? It means the eye. To see with your internal eye, but also to see with God the eye of providence, the creator, the intelligence of the whole universe. To be conscious, that's really what it's about. And, you know, something that I talked about earlier about influence, I think it's really important to understand the difference between inspiration and influence, because I see that people use these terms interchangeably, and I understand why, but we have to understand that inspiration is about being elevated internally. It means to be transformative. And inspiration basically feels like a gift. It feels like an awakening. That's what it really is. It's not just a feeling, though. It really is taking place. When you're inspired by someone or something, you really are having a form of transformation taking place. And you can feel it. It is a gift. Inspiration is a gift. And so that gift, if you care enough to develop that gift, then the awakening process will take place. So it's really important to understand inspiration in this way, because it's a calling, it's an activation, it's magnetism pulling you up if you're willing to do the work to build upon the spire that has been passed into you. But when it comes to influence, influence is neutral, it's not inspiration. It's like inspiration in a sense, but it's neutral because it can be used for egotism and control, or it can be used to inspire and uplift, because influence is an external shaping. It's interpersonal. It's more about directing others than inspiring them. So that means that you can direct others. This is something I talked about in my mental power presentation. You can direct others through sorcery, which is control. It's egotism to get people to, you're basically projecting the disconnect or the divide within you into others, so that way you can control them through fear, or you are directing others with inspiration. By you're not really directing them, but you're trying to inspire them to go in a direction that you would like to see in the world. Like, I don't know, freedom, or a world of no socialism, a world of balance. So you're trying to inspire them and move them in a more oriented direction, a more spiritual direction. So we're going to go to creation now. And the sacred trace is so important when it comes to creation. Because as a conceptual framework, the sacred trace encompasses an infinite range of investigations into creation, which is holy and pure. And this is about the Logos. It is a living process that speaks, that reveals the truth through geometry and sound, through symbols and myth, through animals, cycles, and stories, through all that echoes the pure form or eternal truth. And that means it is something that carries or reflects the essence of truth, being the universal truth. So tracing out creation really is inspirational, spiritual detective work. It's about tracing out the footprint or tracing out the blueprint of reality. It's a spiritual investigation of the self. It's about truly becoming conscious. So we're going to go to the next slide, which is the sacred trace modalities. And again, I talked about the emulation, synchronizing, ritual, and mimicking of the profane trace. Now we're going to get into the sacred trace aspects of these modalities. So this is the antithesis of the profane trace, but I just want to make it very clear, and I think I might have already said this, but it's really important to understand that when I'm talking about the sacred trace being the polarity of being the polar opposite or the antithesis of the profane trace, that does not mean that the profane trace is ultimately evil. It's not. The profane trace is not evil inherently. It is only evil if ignorance prevails. Because the profane trace, or the profane, it is that which is outside of the temple. So that means everything in the material world, and only focusing on those things. That is the profane, because it has no regard, it has no respect, it has no curiosity or no effort to go into the internal temple. So the sacred trace is synonymous and better understood by these four types of tracing. So this is all about tracing out the path to truth and pure forms. And these are techniques, but ultimately they're modalities of the trace. So the first is emulation. And this type of trace is about discovering and aligning to virtue, being the excellence of character, being the alignment of action with higher principles and cultivation of the soul or the self towards what is good and true and harmonious. So it's about tracing out the science of natural law and doing this in order to align in nature correctly and to mature and to evolve ultimately. So as it reads, emulation is the willful, reverent act of aligning oneself with an ideal, archetype, or divine force, not to copy it, but to embody and express it authentically. So again, just so we're clear, I'm going to briefly talk about the profane trace of the emulation, the synchronizing, the ritual, and the mimicking. And then I'm going to go into a deeper explanation of the sacred trace. Okay. So again, I really highly recommend, if you have not listened to show number 75, you have to listen to that. So that way you really understand what it is that I'm getting at with this sacred trace. And that's why I left the profane trace slides up on the website, so that way you could look at them side by side and see the differences with the same modalities. So when it comes to the profane trace with emulation of emulating music that we hear on the radio, that children hear, that teenagers hear, that adults hear, there's a lot of profanity. There's a lot of vulgarity, especially. And the music is just so unbearable to listen to. Most of it is. And people trace the vulgarity unconsciously. They trace all the crap in the music unconsciously. They don't really listen to what is being said. So it goes right into their subconscious, and then they essentially become what they hear. So it's like a mantra. And people keep saying it over and over and over, not understanding what a word spell is. They don't understand word casting. So it corrupts these people. It spreads immoral influence into their minds and into their hearts. And, you know, something I want to be really clear on is that, you know, I'm not necessarily against vulgarity or even profanity in music, especially vulgarity, because it's just that we have to understand that the profane or vulgar words that we use or willfully listen to have associations to an opposition of the sacred. And, you know, and to negate that or ignore that, that would be like negating word casting or word spelling. It's a major part of being conscious of the words that we use, words that we speak and hear. So I think a good question that people really need to ask themselves is the words worthy of something good and helpful, or are they words of profane? Are they lacking the sacred understanding in their art form, their music? And so, I really want people to understand the difference between vulgarity and profanity, because vulgarity is about using what we would call curse words or bad words or tasteless words or very strong language. And, you know, I'm not against any type of vulgarity that is used in a powerful way to convey a very powerful message. I'm not against that at all. I hear amazing vitriol that uses vulgarity in order to make their message more punchier, that really hits you in the soul. And I'm not against that, because I feel it even further, because I understand that there is a righteous anger in the breath of the person who is delivering that message. So I'm all for that. But when it comes to vulgarity being tasteless or being redundant or being used over and over again as like a crutch word, I think this is where the message gets lost. It gets fragmented. It gets muddied in the emotion and anger rather than what the message is really all about. And so it's about controlling the vitriol and controlling the amount of vulgarity that really delivers a better message and a punchier message. So I'm not against vulgarity itself. It's more of the abuse of vulgarity that really translates into a very fragmented form of the powerful message that people are trying to deliver when they get vitriolic and emotional. And I've seen it in myself. I've seen it in others. You know, I understand that anger is a very sacred thing if it's used properly. And so that brings me to profanity, because profanity is about using sacred words in a distasteful or disrespectful way. And so that means profanity can actually be used in a form of vulgarity, because it's about understanding that if we're using words that we really don't understand and we're using them in a way that causes further disorientation or further degradation of the pureness of the word, then this is really what gets us into more trouble. It further muddies the message that we're really delivering, whether that be conscious or unconscious. But I would say it's really dealing with the unconscious, because conscious beings won't do that. Conscious beings will not use words and objects and other things that are sacred in a profane way. And that doesn't mean that everybody's perfect that doesn't use vulgarity or profanity. It just means that they're conscious enough to realize that, you know, this is not really going to convey the deeper message that I want to convey if I'm going to use words that are profane. So I just think that this is very important to understand the difference between these two. And I do recommend that if people really don't understand the difference or examples, I highly recommend that you go look into that on your own, because it's just really important. There's just so much to it, and I'm not trying to make this whole show about vulgarity and profanity, but it's just a very important point that I wanted to bring up. But the sacred trace aspect of this, about music and the words being used in music, is really all about tracing or scanning out the profane, the words, consciously, but then going further and tracing out the sounds of what would be better than that, what would be better than the profane. And that would be maturity, that would be logic, that would be sounds of nature, truly. And that doesn't mean, you know, kumbaya. It just means that it's about being respectful to the words that we're using, to be conscious of the words that we're using. So it's about tracing out moral messages of truth and freedom through what we allow ourselves to listen to. It's about emulating someone who is morally exemplary in their expression, in their artistic expression, in their music, in their acting, or any other, you know, form of expression. And then there was the profane celebrity trace, which is people, you know, they trace out their favorite celebrity. They trace out everything that that celebrity or the celebrities do, and everything that they have, everything that they say, and they do this unconsciously. And the sacred trace aspect of this would be to trace out moral men and women who question reality, who speak with honesty and honor and fight ignorance, who are just, they're not going to be celebrities, let's just face it, okay? People who do speak truth, a lot of them do end up being worshipped as celebrities. And then, of course, that gets to their head and they get egotistical and change, unfortunately. But these moral men and women who I'm talking about, they do what they do courageously in the face of the current condition of slavery. You know, this current socialist system, they do this courageously in spite of fear. And this is something that we can trace. It's something we can see. It's something that we understand is good and should be done, because we recognize that the system of slavery is not correct. It's immoral. It's wrong. So it's about seeing the courage in others to act moral, to act unafraid. This is about inspiration, to be inspired by those who are stepping into courage in spite of fear. So it's about being intelligent enough to know the difference between dark, deceiving cowards who come off as, you know, nice and friendly and likable. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of popularity. They're famous, maybe. Versus people who are moral versus people who are knowledgeable and loyal and honorable, people who are courageous and strong, and ultimately people who are honest, because it's about tracing the line of genuine character. It's about tracing the noble efforts against ignorance, ultimately. So then I talked about the identity theft, you know, taking other people's content and using it for making money or generating some kind of popularity. And this is very, very important to understand, because it's such a big, big thing that a lot of people do. A lot of people love to become copycats instead of emulating for the sacred. So the sacred trace would be to emulate for the sole purpose of learning truth and becoming a better person. So it's really not a sole purpose, but it's about learning truth. It's about becoming healed and better and going in the direction of freedom. And we also have to understand that knowledge is truly free. The knowledge that we are tracing from these people is truly free. And ignorance is the refusal to learn and understand that knowledge. So think about emulating other people as a means of tracing out the sacred by learning what they say and how they say what they say, and then arriving at an understanding of what they say, and then speaking out to the world what they have come to understand. And the act of laying this knowledge out for others is part of understanding the sign language. It is about ritualizing the information as a means of further learning that information, because it adds clarity. And this emulation, you know, I want to really extrapolate on this emulation, because emulation is what Hiram Abiff is all about. To emulate Hiram Abiff or Osiris or Horus or Mithra or Apollo or Odin or Jesus and many other archetypal figures. That's what they're all about. They're all about emulating. They are something to point at or reference as a means of preserving the knowledge of natural law. And that doesn't mean that you have to have an archetype to learn natural law, but they are part of the unfoldment of natural law. Natural law is the key that we need to unlock what these archetypes really represent. But as archetypal figures with some kind of moral value system, they help us align ourselves to them, but not to copy them. Because again, like the definition states, emulation is the willful, reverent act of aligning oneself with an ideal archetype or divine force, not to copy it, but to embody and express the same spirit of them authentically. And again, you know, it's not just about archetypes that we can be inspired by. I said this right in the beginning of the show. We can also be inspired by each other. We can also be inspired by other people who have done some really spectacular things in this world. And I would say that, you know, being a child or a teenager, I was heavily inspired by the artist from Spain, the surrealist painter, Salvador Dali. And he is very famous for, especially for the melting clock painting, which is called the persistence of memory. And I wanted to be more like Dali, especially his art. So, you know, when I was younger, I traced out some of his techniques. I actually traced his art, some of his art, just to try to understand his decisions and where he got his inspiration. You know, what inspired him? What was it that made him go so extreme, but also still maintain a form that's recognizable? And also, that's what inspired me to become a caricature artist. I always loved exaggerations in art because it was taking the form and pushing that form in a way that still maintained the likeness of that form. And I just always thought that was so cool. And interestingly enough, some of his art was inspired by Sigmund Freud's work on the unconscious. He was inspired by his work on dreams and sexuality. And, you know, even his melting clock painting was inspired by Freud's work. So, you know, it's all this inspiration and emulation is going on. And when we become conscious of it, it's really amazing just to, you know, see where it all comes from, to see where your inspiration comes from, to see what you have emulated, to see what you have become in the here and now. And, you know, I just think it's a wonderful thing. I mean, I'm very thankful for Dali because going into the realm of exaggeration has been such a wonderful experience for me personally. And it's really cool to see other people be inspired by what I have put out as a result. So it's a very beautiful thing. So, you know, I've traced out a lot of people. I've traced out so many different artists. I've traced out so many different, you know, truth speakers, or, you know, just people trying to get to the truth, or people sharing what they've learned. I've traced out what they say. I've traced out how they say what they say. I've traced out how they appear. I've traced out their aesthetics, because I'm only trying to understand what inspired that. Because I recognize that the people that I'm inspired by are doing things and saying things that are resonating in a way that I can tell that they're genuine, or that they have something genuine to bring to the table, something that is beneficial, something that is going to help people evolve into something more than what they are. And while I was trying to better myself and educate myself in my younger years and up to now, I've traced out the sacred through some of the most highly educated moral individuals that I've ever heard of or come across. And, you know, I've traced out people like, and of course, people listening to this already know the names that I'm going to name off, because they've had the biggest impact for me, which is I've traced Manly P. Hall's work. I've traced Gerald Massey's work, Bruce Lipton's work, Mustafa Gadala's work, Albert Mackey, Mark Passio, Albert Churchward, and, you know, the list goes on. But these are some of the big names that have really inspired me. Their great work has just absolutely lifted me in transformation, in the sense that they didn't do it themselves. I allowed their work to, you know, come into my life because I seeked out the truth, and these people seeked out the truth. And it doesn't mean that everybody that I am talking about, that I agree with all their work, but I can tell that what they have put forward has really brought some beautiful light. These are the adepts that I'm talking about in the beginning of the show. And, you know, of course, the list goes on, but it's really important to understand how powerful their work really is. And I would say that the Cubbyhole is a testament to their work. It is a respect. It's a regard to their work. The Cubbyhole is an amalgamation of their work, in a sense. You know, there's a lot of stuff that you're going to hear in the Cubbyhole that you won't find in their work, but it's very similar. But, you know, a lot of their work has ended up in the Cubbyhole, and I'm very thankful for that, because it's all about constellating. It's all about connecting the dots to see the degrees in the value systems of the information that's being brought forward. So that's why it's important to understand natural law. Because natural law is the key that unlocks all, truly. It unlocks all the mysteries. And so to have that shield and go through information like these people have put forward, it really helps deal with the knowledge that they're putting down, because they understand natural law. All these people, all these adepts understand natural law, and they recognize how important it is to unfolding this great mystery that lies before us. But it's not just them that I've traced out. I've traced out so many other people. I've traced out the profane. You know, you have to understand that we have to trace out the deepest, darkest aspects. You know, that's what the shadow work is all about. And, you know, really just tracing out as deep and dark and profane as it goes, as a means of understanding the depths of the human condition, because it's all psychology. Now, something that I've been wanting to mention for a very long time is, I really hope anyone listening to these shows, I hope that they know and understand by now that nobody owns knowledge. Nobody can own knowledge. Knowledge is not up for ownership of any human being. It never has, and it never will be. Knowledge is everybody's right, regardless of what anyone says, regardless of what any authority of science says, or authority of literature says, or anyone out there. Nobody owns knowledge. I do not own knowledge. You don't own knowledge. Nobody does. And it doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter what anyone else says. Nobody owns it. It is inherently all human beings' right in nature. So that being said, if you want to publicly talk about epigenetics or the biology of belief, for example, if you want to talk about these topics exactly like Dr. Bruce Lipton, then you have that inherent right. He does not own the knowledge of epigenetics. He does not own the biology of belief. So we have to understand that that knowledge is everyone's right. It's everyone's right to use it how they please, as long as they're, you know, morally upright in the way that they use that information. And I would go as far to say, as long as they're being respectful and using it in a sacred way, to use it with reverence, because obviously, you know, if you're using it in a deceptive way, it is profane, and therefore it's not a right. So if someone wants to trace Bruce's work and use it to teach and help others, then they have that right. even if they sound just like Bruce's work, even if they sound just like Bruce and the way that he speaks and how he, you know, teaches and the words that he's using, they have that right. Now, as far as thinking that someone can trace Lipton's work and think that they know more about that work or that subject, or claiming that, you know, they discovered that type of knowledge on their own, when you can definitely tell that they directly copied his work word for word, then obviously that's being dishonest. It's being disrespectful to his work and to the work in general, to that knowledge. And, you know, anybody in their right mind, any intelligent people are going to catch on to that dishonesty and that disrespect, and they're going to disregard that type of work because most people know better, and they're more than likely going to call it out too. But either way, the truth remains knowledge. No matter how closely copied and used, all knowledge is a right to use. It's a right to learn. It's a right to read. It's a right to study. It's a right to speak. It's a right to teach. It's a right to share all knowledge, even without giving any credit to others who have shared the same knowledge in a more, you know, you could say famous light. And I'm saying this with all respect to Bruce Lipton's work. I really have a very deep appreciation for what he has brought to the table because it's very valuable and it really does help people get out of the chains of victimhood, especially, you know, victimhood to genes. And so that means that, you know, if you're going to take someone else's work and use it, obviously, you know, the most respectful, kind thing that you could do to show that you have reverence for their work is to, you know, give them credit. But, you know, that being said, Bruce Lipton does not own the knowledge of epigenetics. Albert Churchward doesn't own the knowledge of the ancient Egyptian mythos or origins. Thomas Aquinas doesn't own the knowledge of natural law. Richard Witherell or Mark Passio doesn't own the knowledge of natural law or morality. Aleister Crowley doesn't own the knowledge of thelema. Nobody owns knowledge, period. So it is important to trace and use the knowledge freely while you still can. Because, you know, things are getting pretty nasty around here with censorship, and I don't know how much longer this knowledge is going to be available. We live in the age of information, but how long that's going to last, I don't know. So just make sure to not waste any time and, you know, trace as much information as you possibly can. And really, we should be doing that even in the age that is outside of the age of information. But I think, you know, there's a reason why we're here and now. And we have the ability to trace and understand the trace, and we must. There's a reason that this information is surfacing. So we're going to go to synchronizing now. Synchronizing is very, very important because it is about tracing the movement in things or people. Okay, so it is the act of entering into an energetic, rhythmic, or symbolic resonance with a sacred pattern, whether through breath, movement, emotion, sound, phonetics, or intention. So it's about harmonizing with nature and, you know, harmonizing with the cosmos. And think about what I just talked about with the cone spire or the conspire when we're talking about synchronizing. So the profane trace in the political spectrum is the ignorance of the brain and consciousness. It's a dog-eat-dog authoritarian belief system. That's really what the political spectrum is. You know, people who believe in this spectrum to be a true, real thing. And unconsciously, the profane seek to sync up with a politician or, you know, some kind of policy or some political agenda. And as a result, it traces out the false mother and father archetypes. And this is really, really important to what I'm talking about with the cosmic parents. But the sacred trace in this case is the investigation into the traumas of abandonment, especially, and realizing that we've been cut off from our cosmic parents. And we need to reunite ourselves so we grow up and take back what has been stolen and what has been scattered away from our sight. But also it's what we have neglected. So the tracing of these parents, of these parental beings, is about learning the evolution of the ancient Egyptian mythos through esoteric Freemasonry, which is the method, and having the science of natural law as a spiritual key to unlocking these mysteries and this unfoldment. So that's a really big deal. And I really hope that people who do think politically, I hope they hear this message before things get really dark in this world, because we can either go completely extinct or completely enslaved, which really is about going extinct. Or we can turn this around by educating ourselves and reorienting ourselves. You know, what is it going to take? What is it going to be? And when it comes to sports and video games, the synchronizing of the profane trace is about watching sports as a form of ego identifying, to identify with the players, to identify with the teams. People are just so engulfed in sports and watching sports that all they do is live through the players. They live through the team, which means they identify in a way that if the team wins or loses, that's what changes the outcome of that person's mood or the way their life is. And this is very sad and depressing that so many people are like this, especially in a condition of slavery. And that's really what it is people are ego identifying because they're running away, because something is missing. And so when something is missing, they're trying to put something in place for what is missing in their life. And, you know, playing video games. This is also, you know, where something is missing. So this is escapism. They're both escapism. Sports and playing video games is a form of escapism, especially if it's used in an abusive way. But when it comes to video games, it's even more of a fantasy because it's a whole different world. Even though sports is a fantasy, but it's, you know, it's still in real life, but the video game is a digitalized fantasy. It has different rules. It has, it's not bound to any spiritual laws, but it does have rules. And the sacred trace in this case, as far as, you know, sports, it would be to trace out the best version of the self. It's not about winning in competition per se. It's about joy in the play of the journey. You know, we have to understand life itself isn't a sport. And I think anybody knows that. But it's like a sport that has an objective that has to be self-discovered. Because unlike most sports with predefined goals, which is, you know, the goals would be to win, to score, you know, to finish the game out. Life requires each person to uncover their own purpose. It's an unfoldment. But of course, you're reaching for a goal. You're reaching for light. You're reaching for truth. And for video games, it would be, you know, the sacred trace would be to become one's own exemplar in reality. It's about taking on the spiritual journey towards the goal of truth instead of the empty win of a digital game. Because life itself isn't a game, but it's like a game. It does have an objective that has to be self-discovered. And also there has to be an aim in both the video game or video games and the objective reality. There, you know, there's a structure in the rules of the video game. There's a structure in the objective reality. But of course, the rules or principles of reality actually apply. The ones in the video game don't. So it's an escapism. People think that living their life out through a video game is escaping the principles and laws of reality. And that's definitely not true. It might seem like it, but that's not how it works. But of course, people who are playing video games, who are abusing video games, who are playing them all the time and never learning anything, they're just unconscious anyway. They don't realize that they're basically going through life unconsciously and then playing a video game unconsciously and getting stuck in a box within a box. And, you know, this is where most people are at in this world. And, you know, also winning the game isn't always about a fixed achievement. It's about how you play. It's about how you explore and develop as a person, as a soul. I also talked about the hollow, profane trace of porn, you know, treating something so sacred in a way that's like a street drug. And this act destroys, it obliterates any type of real connection with someone or even yourself. It distorts the mind. It distorts the heart. And when it comes to the sacred trace, it would be the internal respect of unifying the feminine and masculine, the sacred feminine and the sacred masculine components of the brain, of consciousness, bringing them together through knowledge and understanding, time and attention, overcoming base desires, and then, you know, possibly externally manifesting that with someone special who is also doing the internal work as well. Because as two people come together who are doing internal work, internal shadow work, when they come together, their relationship works much better. It grows. They grow together, truly. Because as you grow internally with your two hemispheres uniting, you will also grow with others who are doing the same. Because it's about merging with certain frequencies and then becoming aligned. It's about integration with the higher will. Now, you know, I talked about military and man's law, man's law enforcers, who are, you know, they're a major part of the profane trace. They violate the principles of enlightenment, being the principles of non-aggression and self-defense. They do the opposite. That's how they hold people under duress. But the sacred trace would be to then learn and be aligned to these pillars of enlightenment, being the self-defense and non-aggression principles. But it's also, you know, going further into these pillars, because it's about learning the terrestrial and the celestial to understand the law, the real law of creation, the universal law, natural law, God's law, the law of one, the karmic law, the law of consequentialism. I also briefly talked about the uniform chaos of scrolling, you know, on your phone or, you know, on your TV, where you're just scrolling through channels, you're scrolling through people's posts or their stories or, you know, anything on social media where people are just going through everything so fast to where they don't even give themselves 2 or 3 seconds to watch something. And so this is a major chaos that has taken place because it is the opposite of the real scrolls. It is the embodiment of this ritual of Osiris because it's about the light being scattered. It's about the light being shredded into these scrolls of chaos. That is what the ritual is teaching us. That's what we can learn from this ritual. So the sacred trace would be to learn this ritual and also learn compartmentalization of knowledge and information. So, you know, that being said, I think this is a good place to end the show. And I really hope that what I've put on the table has inspired you. I hope it has resonated with you. And, you know, this is very, very important knowledge. It's difficult. And there's so much more to say. There's so much that I haven't said. And I'm going to try to pick up on the next show and explain this information much further. We still got to go through the sacred trace modalities of ritual and mimicking. And I probably will start the show off with emulation and synchronization just to catch us up to speed. But I really hope that you're starting to really see what the sacred trace really is all about, because it is so important to everything that we do. And I think it's going to make even more sense when I get into the Logos and when I also talk about Thoth. So that being said, I really appreciate all your time and all your attention if you made it this far. And if you're interested in more shows or presentations or news, please go to cubbyhole.com. And also, I really want to make this very clear that we are being greatly affected by censorship, as, you know, I guess everybody knows this by now. And I highly recommend downloading these episodes and sharing these episodes when and where you can. And the download button to do this is right under the audio player. You'll see it says download the show. And I really highly recommend downloading all the shows, or, you know, all the shows that you find value in. And I recommend all of them because they're in order. but just, you know, do that. And then when you go to the audio player, you left click and it will take you to another window, another play button. And right underneath or right to the right of that, you'll see that you can left click on the three little dots on the right, and it will give you the option to download these episodes. Okay. So it's pretty easy. It's very important to preserve this knowledge. Even if you don't really fully agree or understand the information, it is very crucial to pass this information on. And I would do this for anyone's work that I find value in, because, and then when I say that, I mean myself, and if I were you, I would do that, because we don't know how long this information is going to be allowed up. That's really what I'm trying to get at. And we want to make sure that we preserve the best we can. So that being said, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening, and keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.